That clock is just a little bit slow, but it's 7 o'clock. So I'd like to call to order the Board of Port Commissioners meeting for March 19th. Can we say the Pledge of Allegiance?
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody, for showing up. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Gardena.
Here.
Commissioner Stevens.
Here.
Commissioner Rainey.
Here.
Vice Chair Howe.
Here.
And Chair Blumenberg will be absent today.
Thank you. Adoption of agenda. Is there are any questions or comments on the agenda?
I'd move to adopt the agenda as presented.
I'll second.
So moved. Oh, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thanks. Okay, approval of the minutes from the meeting of, there's 2 minutes, meeting of February 19th and March 5th.
I'll approve the minutes both for the February 19th and March 5th as presented.
I'll second.
So second, so moved. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Public comment. Do we have anybody in the audience who'd like to address anything not on the agenda? Anybody online? Okay. Close public comment. Board communications. Anybody? We're whipping right through it tonight. Okay. Thank you. No board communications. I don't have any either. Staff and general manager reports, please.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Okay, a lot about Mermaid Month. We've got Jennifer out there in the audience. If you have questions for her later with our departmental reports that are part of this report, feel free to ask away. But on tap this Saturday, March 22nd from 1 to 4 is the second March's Mermaid Month special event days. If it's anything like the first one 2 weeks ago, we're in for a treat. Lots of folks out enjoying all the activities. A lot of excitement around the theme, and this weekend's events will feature more entertainment and themed vendors, as well as a live concert by local band Made West on a pirate ship stage on the main lawn. Due to the popularity of the last event, additional mermaid experiences have been added, including swimming mermaid courtesy of Ventura Dive and Sport, our very own tenant, who are offering an experience to swim with the mermaid along with an educational component and story time. Plus, Jean-Luc, owner of La Petite Cafe and Bakery, will be demonstrating ice carving at 3:30 p.m. I hear he's quite handy with a chainsaw. And Ventura Pottery Gallery is hosting a Treasures from the Sea Market on the 22nd as well, with live pottery demonstrations. Boatyard Pub, a lot of work going on out there right now for them, has a special Siren Splash cocktail on the March menu, and the Greek, Ventura Swimwear, and Mermaid Gallery all have event and monthly mermaid specials. All are welcome to join in Seaside Fun this Saturday as part of March's Mermaid Month at Ventura Harbor Village. Spring break has officially started for many school districts, and over the next 5 weeks, Harbor Village will be host to weekly music on Saturdays from 1 to 4 p.m. to celebrate that, provide entertainment for everyone. The Harbor also welcomes back the Hot Shot Up volleyball tournament to Harbor Cove Beach on April 5th. This event has grown over the past few years and is a fundraiser for fallen and or injured firefighters. Registration to participate can be found on venturaharborvillage.com. As I mentioned, we have all of our departmental reports for you in the packet, and we've got, I think, a pretty good representation of our department managers here tonight. If you have any questions, always an opportunity for the public to see the great work and great projects going on around the village and the harbor as a whole. So with that, I'll turn it back to you.
Wonderful. That's great news. The mermaid sounds wonderful. Jackie.
Yeah, I did. Two questions out of the report. One is, John, did I see in the Harbor Patrol report that we had a death in the harbor? Cardiac arrest?
Better look up that report.
That's not uncommon.
Oh, okay. Oh, enough said then.
I mean, We run medical calls and with the mobile home park and the average age being higher.
I just hadn't seen that before. So, okay.
Sorry.
No, no. Well, that's okay. And then the other one was opinion of the staff report regarding dredging. I think everyone is well aware that federal funding is perhaps uncertain right now. So opinions of what is to come varied. I'm just curious what the varied opinions were on.
Well, when we were in D.C., we heard a lot of doom and gloom from some of the members of Congress. Congressman Garamendi in particular was, you know, very morose over how things were shaping up. And then we heard others that were saying things were looking pretty good. However, just in the last week, things have changed a lot. When Congress approved the continuing resolution to fund the government through September 30th, they removed every project for the Corps from the budget. That was a congressional initiative, not a presidential initiative. Caught a lot of people by surprise. So now the Corps of Engineers will have to figure out how to pay for the dredge that's operating with money that got taken away. So it's a bit of a really, really, it's really strange times. Presently, Brian sent out some letters to all of our local elected regional representatives, state senator, assembly member, et cetera. And we're submitting a programmatic request for 2026 to basically all of the movers and shakers in D.C., both senators, Carbajal, and then Carbajal sending a letter to the president's office on our behalf. So we're just trying to make sure that we're covering everything shotgun style because it's really, really unprecedented what's happening right now.
And I don't know whether that changes our thinking about the budget. And I mean, we don't have to answer that question now, but just thinking ahead for just having a backup plan if something were to fall through with the dredging funds.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we're going to have a budget study session coming up.
Yeah.
What right now looks to be probably first meeting in June.
Okay.
And certainly that could be part of the discussion. Yeah, the letters we're sending out now is probably a doubling up of our advocacy efforts and making sure that we're funded for 26. Obviously, the dredge is out there now. This contract was already let before some of those other issues started to creep up. So we're fully funded for this year. I think the concern is for next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, on that topic, the grant for the Port of Wainimi that we are a subgrantee, is that where's that stand?
The CEQA is underway. The data there's been some data requests from us. We've provided all of the data that they've asked for. The data from the ports of Wainimi's fisheries, two of the three have responded with the data they need. Brian and I met with the community development director and her deputy director,
assistant director,
assistant director about 2 weeks ago. They strongly encouraged that we would that we submit a pre-application. So that is actually one of the PSAs that we've recommended is to get ahead of that because while the environmental study is going on, Caltrans prohibits the use of grant funding for any further engineering and architecture studies. So this is us moving the needle a little bit, as Brian put it when we were talking about it, that's putting, you know, $50,000 on the table in order to, you know, confidently secure that $16 million. So.
But all of the shenanigans back in Washington aren't affecting the grant in any way?
No, it's state money. So that $16 million is all via the governor's office to Caltrans, and that money is not coming from a federal source.
Good.
We did have a conversation, though, I think at the last meeting about the timing of when the board here would have a chance to hear about the environmental. And I think I had suggested it was likely that we would try to put something within the 30-day comment period before the Port of Wainimi board takes action on that, and that's the plan. So we've asked the consultant to, you know, when that 30 days is right now, you know, that's unknown, but it's likely to be late spring, early summer when that's ready to go. And when it is, and during that 30 days, we'll put it on for the board's consideration.
Anything else, Chris? Tony?
Yes, I just want to commend on page 34, page 35. You don't appreciate this until you need it, but the surface knoll restroom plumbing replacement being done, and it's grant funded, so that's a good thing. and then the Harbor Cove restroom plumbing replacement. That's been completed. And I just think that it's important to let everyone know that restrooms are usually one of those things that people complain about, you know, oh, when are you going to get it fixed? And it takes a long time. We've been able to do that. And then on the following page, the floor drains, pans, and P-traps replacement. I'm a construction brat. My dad was a plastering contractor. So these things I appreciate when I see them. And again, it's only when you need it that you appreciate it, that it works, that it's there. And I just want to say thank you to staff for getting it completed.
You know, I don't think in one of your reports there, but I did want to recognize the accounting team had their kickoff meeting with Yardi today, and the additional company that will be providing support and implementation. So they're already running with the new approvals in place and starting to work on that new program.
That's great.
Yes, and I've got I got a call from the auditor. I have to get back to him, so.
That's all wonderful. And yeah, I noticed how many of the projects were grant funded, which is marvelous. I had a few things myself. The Schooner Harbor signage, I see that's moving along. Do we have plans to do the same for the Harbor and Spinnaker?
So basically the way that's going to work is that the new the physical part of the sign at Spinnaker will remain. In fact, the sign at Schooner was designed after the theme over at Spinnaker. What'll change will be the color scheme and the way the lettering is affixed to the sign to modernize it and give it a new look. So call phase one Schooner at Harbor, and we have, I believe, permits in place, and bids are being obtained now, and I think we're pretty close to a kickoff for that. So that's going to get underway. We'll be able to take the temporary signs down and do that demolition work out at the corner at Schooner. And then I think we put into, or will be putting into, FY 25-26. It's probably already there in the 5-year CIP to go to work on the Spinnaker sign. So yeah, that would be exciting to see that get underway. Yeah.
Great, thank you. The detached breakwater repair, I had a question about it with funding, but now with I imagine that's impacted.
Yeah, so in theory, the money that was allocated to do the dredging that is performing now had enough residual leftover money to do that study. Everyone planned to do it, and then Friday last week, everyone's like, what does this mean? And the answer is we don't know. The Corps of Engineers will take 60 days to produce a work plan, and at that point, we will understand what that really means. And if not, then we're back to advocating for that money to be in 2026 as well.
Right. Well, not great, but yeah, thank you. Harbor Patrol, you're doing an excellent job on the training. It shows with all the rescues and so on. That's been wonderful. I noticed, you know, kudos for taking the Ventura City Public Works Director on a tour. And I was wondering if there are any takeaways from that. I saw a possible MOU for cooperating better, but I was wondering if there are any other takeaways from that.
Yeah, essentially that's what we're looking for. We've been over the years trying to build our relationships with them to get them more involved in what is really their area. Coincidentally, the very next day we had the broken dock, so it was timely, and the amount of time I spent there I think was appropriate. He is going to come back, and we're going to do one for the port district so he can hear all our side of it too. But being that he is running that department, and that is an area with a lot of potential need, I think it was very beneficial. He was very appreciative of it.
That's excellent. Thank you very much. I think that was a good thing to do. I'm very glad to see you're working to build a better relationship with the Ventura County Commercial Fishermen's Association, particularly with the modernization coming up. So excellent there. We don't need to do it now, but I'm curious about the three process leasing highlights. Maybe you can give me you referred to at least the three-step process leasing strategy that may have been decided before, you know, I was here. We don't have to cover it tonight. And you said we've completed step one, so or process one.
Oh, yeah. So sorry. Yeah, that's the basically the in our conversation with the leasing consultant, we had them basically do a secret shopper type visit to the shopping center, provide us some feedback. Then they've, I think we just got it maybe today, a report on recommendations, the kind of gap analysis of the retail businesses that we're looking, we should be trying to get that maybe we don't have, and you know that are maybe trending well. I haven't had a chance to see the report because I literally think it came in today. And then the step three, something that we've contemplated internally, was maybe we would use this same consultant to provide coaching to our retail businesses, or at least the opportunity if they so wanted to address some of the things that the secret shopping experience revealed.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, that was identified in the current fiscal year leasing strategy that was adopted a year ago, May. So probably a month before you got here. Yeah.
Month or two. I was delighted to see the tenant sales are doing so well we're only 1 month in, but restaurants up 10%. Is that mostly Loose Cannon or they all?
Well, it's really mostly that January was so terrible last year.
Oh.
The weather was really miserable.
What a downer, Todd.
Sorry, Aaron.
Is that the same for charters? Because that's up.
You know, the last 2 years, January and February, and not this year, but the previous 2 years, January and February were really terrible atmospheric river events.
Yeah.
And at that time, the numbers looked pretty miserable. And so now I think this is, without actually going back and looking dollar for dollar, I think this is much more representative of a rebound to normal than something, you know, out of the park.
LoopNet, I saw it says average time on page is 22 seconds. Well, obviously not everybody's going to stay on the page. Do we see any kind of distribution so we know, you know, how long some people stayed on the page?
We'll take a look.
I'd be curious to see that. Great job on the floating docks and washdown, getting that done and coming in on budget. That's marvelous. That's all I have for you. Sorry.
That's great. I think that's it.
Okay. Let's see. Consent items. This will be a roll call. We have, approval of out-of-town requests for Jennifer Talt London, Callie Brazerl, and John Higgins. Does anybody have any questions on that one? Adoption of resolution accepting the work of the Blue Water Marine for the Ventura Harbor Public Boat Launch Ramp. Any questions on that? Awarding the bid for 1583 and 1575 Spinnaker Drive Lower Section Re-roofing Project. Anything on that? I had one question on that. I was surprised to see it's a great warranty, except only a five-year warranty on the underlayment for the mansard tile roofs.
Yeah, I'd have to revisit why the warranty is set the way it is. It has been this way with all the contracts we've done with Garland, who've been the material supplier for all the re-roofing projects since, I think, 2017.
It's hard to understand how they can have a 30 or 40-year warranty on a roof if they only warranty the underlayment for 5 years, but I don't know.
Yeah, good question. I'll revisit.
Okay. And then the budget, the bid is for $197,000, but we had a budget of $350,000. Was that $350,000 going to cover other things too that were not covering in this $197,000?
Well, we were pivoting when we did the mid-year budget adjustments from doing the roof where the restaurant at 1575 will be. We had started collecting some preliminary cost estimates. There was a bit of a miscommunication between what the contractor wanted, you know, was bidding when they were just giving us like placeholder numbers. So fortunately for us, they overestimated what we thought we were asking them to do at the time. And so when we said, no, what we really want to do is this, we ended up with a lot more money in the budget. But I'm not saying that that's money that won't ever get spent. It's just we have a smaller scope than was identified by the contractor when we were getting a cost estimate.
Great. And then one question on consent item D. with the modernization. If we're going ahead with plans, is there any risk at all, or what level of risk if, you know, things coming out of CEQA? There's probably some level of risk, but.
Well, I think, I mean, CEQA could certainly inform future planning decisions for sure. I think the bigger risk is not moving forward based on our conversations with the city's planning department. So, and planning, I think, expects that it's not a completely finished design, but there's enough information to have a pre-planning exercise with the city, which will help gather feedback, I think, from the various departments and so on. So, yeah.
Is there any public comment? Anything online? Does anybody care to accept the consent agenda?
I move approval of the consent agenda.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Sorry.
No. I remember in the nick of time, it's a roll call vote.
Commissioner Gardena?
Yes.
Commissioner Steven?
Yes.
Commissioner Rainey?
Yes.
Vice Chair Howe?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to the standard agenda. We have an informational presentation by Ventura West Marina for their redevelopment project on parcel 17. Presentation by Brian and Matt Mancy of Aldergate.
Yeah, thank you. I'll start off here and then we'll turn it over to Matt. So the exclusive negotiating agreement, the ENA, which is what I'll refer to it as moving forward, was entered into March 20th last year, 364 days ago, between the district and TBBW, who of course has been the master tenant at Ventura West Marina and Aldersgate developer. So collectively together referred to as the developer in documents you'll see related to the ENA. During the negotiation period, the district and developer agreed to negotiate potential terms, conditions, covenants, restrictions, and agreements of a future agreement or agreements to be entered into between them for developers' potential long-term ground lease of the site from the district for development of the proposed project. This is on the land side of the parcel 17. In terms of the time period for this, the ENA is for a three-year agreement, with provisions for extensions based on activities related to the ENA and progress made along the way. So the period of time can be for a total of up to 6 years. The ENA calls for the proposed development and operation of a mixed-use residential development on the site, including the following elements: both market rate and affordable housing, retail and office space, restaurant space, and open space as well. The proposed development will be subject to the California Environmental Quality Act, district approvals, land use requirements, and all of the necessary entitlements that you've certainly seen on many other projects that have come through the Port District. Developer has been meeting with the district on a regular basis. We have standing monthly meetings and oftentimes meet more than once a month when we have other topics to focus on. These meetings are designed to continue to move the project forward and in completing the developer obligations, which you'll hear more about in a little bit. Developer is also required to attend and participate annual board meetings. So here they are, and here we are for this item. This is the first annual presentation regarding the ENA. The developer obligations include providing a community engagement plan, conducting their due diligence, preparing financial plans and reports, and submitting a proposed project description for future district processing. As I mentioned, Matt Mancy will be giving a presentation, but I did want to recognize the TBBW team. We have Dick Beecham is here this evening, Eric Leslie, Justin Papa, and Natasha Delamere. So, with that, I'll turn it over to Matt. As you noted in the recommendation, this is really not an action item tonight. This is fulfilling the requirement and obviously a great opportunity for the public to hear as what's happened in the last year. So with that, I'll turn it over to Matt Mancy.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah.
Good to be back. Can't believe it's been a year, but my name is Matt Mancy with Aldersgate on behalf of my partners at TBBW. We're honored to be back and ready to present our annual update. That's our table of contents. We're going to go through it kind of one by one, and then I'll be here to answer questions afterwards. Project is a joint venture between TBBW Company, LP, and Aldersgate Home. The project represents a significant development opportunity with the potential to transform the local waterfront area. The presentation provides an update on the obligations outlined in the ENA Section 6, examining various aspects of the project, including community engagement, financial feasibility, and due diligence. With continued thorough planning, regulatory compliance, and effective risk management, the project is poised to become a landmark development in the Ventura waterfront area. That's kind of one of our renderings there on the left. The TBBW Company and Aldersgate Home mixed-use project is designed to create a vibrant multifunctional asset combining residential, commercial, and recreational facilities. Key components. Residential units, we're assuming about 120 apartments. That could change up or down with waterfront views. Second-story pool deck overlooking the harbor. Commercial space, approximately 10,000 square feet for retail office use. Affordable housing. There will be approximately 20 units reserved for deed-restricted affordable housing. Again, that exact number will be determined as the project progresses through the entitlement process. There'll be recreational amenities, pocket parks, enhanced boardwalk, community spaces. We're going to make sure that the project is adequately parked. There'll be parking inside the building as well as surface parking. And view corridors, obviously, we want to make sure are protected. Some of our key goals, and this is, a community engagement plan we're putting together to make sure that we get the word out to key stakeholders in the area. Some of those key goals are identifying and ensuring those stakeholders and their involvement. Promoting transparency, making sure they know what's going on and they're not blindsided. Fostering community support long-term sustainability, enhance economic opportunities. And the target audience, these are gonna be local residents, regulatory agencies, environmental groups, tourism and visitors, cultural and arts groups. And we've kind of identified some five or six main kind of stakeholders we believe are gonna be the key focus groups. There may be more, but those would be the Four Points, the Holiday Inn, the Portside Development next door, the Ventura Visitors Bureau, the Ventura Chamber, and boaters and recreational users. Some of those strategies, public meetings and workshops, open houses, interactive workshops, virtual engagement, informational booths at community events provide information and engage community members. Sponsorships, be local events, creating opportunities for the development team to interact with the community through activities. Community-focused communication, that would be social media, websites, email newsletters, feedback forums. Environmental, information sessions on how the development will address sustainability. We know that's going to be a big one. Highlight green building practices and environmental protections. And then the feedback part is important. Regular feedback loops, continued community engagement. So our engagement plan is designed to foster an open and collaborative process that empowers stakeholders to shape the future of the marina and surrounding area. By focusing on inclusivity, transparency, and environmental responsibility, the plan will help to ensure the development enhances the local community while aligning with its values and needs. So due diligence, and this is something we've been working on for the last year now. Basically, we've completed our due diligence and we've deemed the project viable. The condition of the site is satisfactory. The analysis of the state, local laws, zoning, the entitlement risks, the general plan, the future general plan amendments have all been contemplated and completed, and we believe to our satisfaction. The residential demand is strong. It'll likely remain strong for the foreseeable future. As long as the SOAR initiative remains in effect, it's going to really keep prices high, unfortunately, and keep demand high as well, but keeps supply low. The commercial market, the commercial space within the Ventura West Marina project is expected to attract a diverse mix of tenants, including retail stores, restaurants, professional services. The strategic location and high foot traffic are key factors in contributing to the attractive market potential. And our goal is to create a curated environment where we're going to handpick, with the help of Todd and Brian, vendors that really fit the area and fit the needs and fit the wants of the of what we think is our target market. So the general plan update. The draft plan at the beginning of April 2025, so that was, we met with Rachel Diamond, and we got an update, and this is stuff that came directly from her. This was 2 weeks ago when we met with her. The draft EIR is beginning in June, and one thing that she was very adamant about was that the general plan will be adopted in October. So that was very good news for us. We know that these things can drag on, and it has dragged on, and so I think she's ready to really step in and assert herself and make sure this gets done by October. And that's good news for us because that means the site is now rezoned for the use that we're contemplating here. And that's about it. I'm here again for questions. That's one of the renderings of our concept building. Thank you all.
Yeah, one thing I think to note, that, and the team's all aware of this, is the, so you have the general plan and then you have the local coastal program, and the LCP, as it's known, will need to be updated as well by the city, and that could take another period of time. And so I think the advice that the team has gotten is that there's not a need to wait for that LCP update. And that the advice is that the team move forward and request of the city an LCP amendment with the general plan update being put in place. So the general plan, as Matt mentioned, again, we promoted, they promoted the movement of the site from harbor commercial to harbor mixed use to be consistent with Portside next door. And the city agrees with that. Council's taken action on that. And as Matt said, now they start to go through their process of environmental review and formally updating that. But because we're on the coast, there is that other layer, and that'll require a separate entitlement process, but one that is contemplated by the team. So as we understand it, ultimately the city is the applicant for that LCP amendment through the Coastal Commission. But certainly a lot of the work, the expense and all that would be on the part of the development team to get it there. So I think they're looking at fall of this year, sort of in tandem with the general plan update being put in place. So I think with that, that's our presentation. But again, I'm sure Matt's happy to go back through any of those slides. Community engagement plan was something that was considered as part of the ENA that was approved by the board a year ago. So that's why you see a lot of information about that. The requirement was to submit a draft plan for us to review.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Matt. Commissioners?
I have a question. And Tom, if you could help me on this. I know the state of California requires some type of a plan for affordable housing for cities, and that there's a name for it.
What is it? Housing element.
Housing element. Okay. The housing element. Will our desire to have affordable housing help the city meet that part of their housing element?
I don't know.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, if you build any affordable housing, you will help them achieve their goal.
Certainly seems like a good question to ask. It could only be helpful.
Then we need to get credit for that because, you know, and the reason why I bring it up is because there's a lot of pushback, I would say, in some cities for doing that. But here we have an enterprise, if you will, going about with economic and residential development and having affordable housing. I was very impressed that that was built in. It wasn't just mentioned, it was basically a strategy for doing that. And I don't think it should go unnoticed that when people come to the harbor, not only that will they be able to have fun, not only will they be able to they'll be able to reside, but their affordability is something that, that's built into the planning.
In addition to the housing element are the RENA goals, which are regional housing needs allocation, and every city has a RENA allocation. I don't know what that number is off the top of my head, but anything that becomes deed-restricted affordable housing that's approved through the city would be used to help calculate the city's effort in meeting those obligations established by the state.
I just want to commend the multilingual effort on the outreach. I'm glad that was specifically called out in the report. I think that's great. I'm curious, I came into the board right when the port side was coming into being as a viable project that could start to rent. I'm wondering if we identified do's and don'ts based on our experience with port side's development that we are sharing with this development.
I don't know that we have a formal list, but I think there's certainly a lot learned from that effort. One is try not to take 20 years to do it.
Good plan.
So I think Matt doesn't want to take 20 years of joking aside. No, there's certainly a lot of issues that come into play with coastal development. It's very complicated. The development team knows that there's a lot of risk involved in coastal development. There's a lot of policies, coastal policies that need to be met. When Matt talks about, coastal views and so on, we haven't been able to identify a specific coastal view corridor. But I think what he's really talking about is being sensitive to the surrounding neighbors within the harbor and looking for ways to both develop the site to its full potential while considering some of those issues. When you see discussions of open space and, pocket parks and enhanced boardwalks, those are things we know that Coastal Commission will look at. And part of that will be trying to make it work within the site that we have here. This is not a site that's as big as Portside, and it certainly can't accommodate the scale of things that was done there, but it certainly will need to touch all of those different kinds of issues. Affordable housing, that that is almost a given in the environment in terms of development, and I'm sure Matt's learned a lot just from building in the city and getting other entitlements here locally on the building side of things. But yeah, it's we're year one in, and a lot of effort ahead. So I think a lot of it with this has been, in some ways, the zoning from Portside paves the way for this. I mentioned that, it's expanding that zone to this site, and it certainly makes sense given the density surrounding the site with Portside and the two hotels. It would be very consistent, I think, in the massing to those areas. So I think there's definitely a lot to be learned and a lot to be put into play here in terms of the site.
Just one last question, because spatially I struggle. We're talking about a parking plan tonight, but we're also talking about enough parking for 120 units.
Yeah, Matt, maybe you're talking.
Yeah. This project that's contemplated is two buildings, and surrounding the buildings will be units, and in the middle is what's called a Texas wrap, which will be a podium project, so concrete parking inside the building, and then units around it on top of it. And then on top of that, and I wish we had the site plan, but around that building or those two buildings will be surface parking. And I believe we got around 250 spaces for 120 units.
Self-contained.
So some of that number that I just gave you is units or parking spaces inside the buildings mm-hmm. that'll be reserved for the residents. And then outside on the surface would be visitors and commercial tenants and things like that.
And marina tenants.
Yes,
as well.
Thank you. Yeah. And marina use. Yeah. The boaters.
Yeah. So when you say self-contained, everything will need to fit within the site itself okay. in terms of meeting, you know, city standards for parking, for housing, all of those things.
And it's not implicated in any way with the parking plan we're talking about tonight.
No.
Great. Yeah, I was curious about parking too, because it's going to turn into more of a challenge with going to the paid parking. Hopefully won't have a negative impact on you. Thank you very much for the presentation. I appreciate you trying to be good neighbors and fit into this harbor. I know a lot of people are worried about it turning into another, you know, Marina Del Rey, and it, you know, it doesn't look like you're doing that, so I appreciate that. Thank you for the update.
I have one quick question. And I really like the engagement plan, but it does not speak to a schedule. When is all this going to take place?
Yeah, so the biggest component was the general plan update and having to wait for that to come through, because that would have signified significant risk, more risk than normal to go without the general plan update being done. So it's our plan to submit our application around that time. And then at that point, we'll have a more solidified site plan, unit count, all that stuff. And then it would be a strategy to then start engaging the public using that plan that we submitted.
And how long do you expect, you have a lot of great activities here and outreach events. I mean, do you think that's going to take, how long do you think you're going to be doing that? I mean, is it a year?
Yeah, I think it'll be through the life of the entitlement process, okay. which okay. can be 3 years,
yeah.
you know, hopefully not 19 or 20, but
hopefully three. I think that's pretty good.
Three would be great.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah.
Great. Thank
yeah.
you.
We've had quite a bit of discussion on that. He put a lot in there.
Oh yeah.
And sometimes it's like it could be too early. Right. I mean, right. there's not enough yet. And I think his timing sounds right to me. You know, the comment on Marina Del Rey is a good one, because it comes up from time to time. And having been there not too long ago, we can sort of look at what I'm guessing are 18 story to 20 story mid-rise residential towers. We're talking about three stories here. So maybe three and a half. So I think it's a very different density and look, and would be something, again, akin to what you see next door at Portside. Yeah, but good comment.
Okay, thank you. Is there any public comment, anything online? Okay, close public comment on that item. Moving to item number two, approval of the parking management professional services agreement with LAZ Parking California. Brian?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I'm going to ask Todd to start off our presentation, and I think he'll be joined with Ben Verdugo.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah, Ben is here in person for support with Dixon Resources, and then Julie's also online, I believe. Next slide. So the recommendation before the commissioners is that you approve a professional services agreement with LAZ Parking LLC in the amount not to exceed $2,179,400 to provide parking management services with a 3-year term and 2 1-year options. We'll get into it, but just for clarity, that is the total amount that would be not to exceed over the entire 5 years if we chose to exercise the option. Next slide. Just a quick recap. We're going to talk a lot about phasing in this, but in essence, this is phase one we're looking at right now, which is the public launch ramp, which is currently a paid parking lot today. The fee structure would alter to match what will be system-wide for Ventura Port District-controlled lots. Master tenant lots are not governed in this program. They're not part of this program. So 24 hours a day is because the launch ramp is used 24 hours a day as it is now. It will be 7 days a week, and it will be $1 an hour for up to 4 hours. And then an all-day pass, $10, which technically is all day and all night for 24 hours. One change that we'll talk about as well later is that parking for less than 1 hour, and not 1 hour free, but parking for less than 1 hour will be complimentary when a user enters their license plate in the system. That's a clarification we'll get into more later, but that's an important distinction. Next slide. Yes. Yeah. ADA. So in just for clarity, California state law does not have a standard for surface parking lots, so they can be charged, but street parking, ADA is free throughout California. So because of the demand for parking and ADA parking spots also being equally in demand, we're going to use the same, the program for the same goal, encouraging turnover. So now we're looking at Harbor Village, Harbor Cove Beach, and Surfers Knoll. As discussed, this is Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and major holidays only. Monday through Thursday, it will be free. The paid parking period won't be 24 hours here. It will be 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. It'll be $1 an hour, up to 4 hours. Over 4 hours, $10. Same thing again. ADA will pay just like anyone else. And again, if you choose to visit for less than 1 hour, you will not have to pay. If you visit for 2 hours, you're paying $2. So the hour is only free to incentivize departing within an hour. Again, we'll talk about that a little bit more, but I just want to keep hammering that point home because I know it is a bit confusing. Next slide. So we have received all the entitlements required. The city approved the COSA development permit on May 23rd. The COSA commission approved it in November 13th. There were some conditions, so we have to keep those in mind as we roll the plan out. One of the most compelling ones was bilingual signage. I think that's actually a fantastic idea. We're very supportive of that. The COSA Commission's permit does put a 5-year term on the CDP, meaning we will have to return to get it extended or to get a new one or to make any changes upwards in rates. Well, which is the next point. No rate increases without approval, either through an amendment or a new permit. A requirement of the city that was put on by the COSA Commission was that the landscaping along Harbor Boulevard must be coastal scenic drive style landscaping. The board did approve a change to the capital improvement budget to incorporate that fairly significant additional expense to replace all the turf there. And then construction is constrained between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday, which isn't a pretty substantial thing because we're really just talking about bolting down 15 machines and putting up some signs. Next slide. So we did the request for proposals after the board approved that in the December meeting. So the notice of to inviting bids was published January 6th. There was a mandatory pre-bid meeting of January 15th. We had seven vendors who qualified as prime attend the pre-bid meeting. The proposal closing deadline was February 12th and interviews held on February 26th. We received two proposals, and we also received a few comments from some of the prospective bidders that our terms and conditions, and in particular liquidated damages, were too punitive. We actually think that's a good thing. Those recommendations came from Dixon as our consultant, and knowing stories of other situations in other parts of the state, if you don't have your prime fully accountable for your subs, then there's finger pointing, and that really is what the liquidated damages and contract requirements created. And so we ended up with two bidders who were ready and willing to accept those responsibilities. And I think that just speaks to their relationship with their sub-consultants. Next slide. The contract type for the vendor is to procure all the equipment, including a vehicle, the signs, and the virtual payment system, installing all the machines and signs, providing on-site maintenance and enforcement, 24/7 bilingual customer support, and assisting district with public messaging. Talk a little bit more about some of those coming up. As I mentioned, the contract is for a 3-year term plus 2 1-year options, and the district will own all physical assets, the vehicle, the parking machines, the signs, et cetera, at the end of the contract. Next slide. As I mentioned, we received two bids. Those bids were thoroughly reviewed by the district staff and Dixon Resources, their staff, and both bids were determined to be fully responsive, responsible, and qualified. Next slide. Both bidders were provided questions in advance of an interview that was held by a panel of myself, Brian, and two employees from Dixon. Supplemental information was received by both bidders after the interviews, and the evaluation across the board was the same between staff and Dixon, that Laz Parking's bid was the lowest price and the best value based on the highly competent bids we received. Therefore, staff's recommending award of the contract to Laz Parking. Next slide. And the fiscal impact, as I said, there's kind of three different components to this. One is the upfront costs, then there will be fixed annual costs, and then there will also be per transaction costs. The total estimated cost based on the bid sheet provided by Laz was $1,269,689 for the initial 3 years, $1,981,271 for all 5 years, including the options. There are additional options for the district to increase Laz staffing for peak periods, redundancy of parking equipment, which we probably will take advantage of, and potentially a redundant second enforcement vehicle. Part two, staff recommends the agreement to include a 10% contingency over 5 years to allow for increased staffing for these peak periods, that redundancy I just mentioned, with a final not to exceed value of $2,179,400. And as proposed, the net revenue of the program is estimated at $1,190,000 based on the base three-year period and $2,460,000 both option years. I'm just going to take a moment here that one of the biggest assumptions of this program is that we have no data as to how long people actually come and spend. We have lots of anecdotal data. We have our own selves as experience. Most people come to a restaurant. You know, industry standard is 75 minutes. To visit a restaurant. But if you're waiting for a table at Andrea's or Brophy's on a busy day, that could certainly go up. If you're going out to paddle on one of the dragon boats that the Cooper's own, you know, now you're out another hour and a half, 2 hours. We don't have data because we've never tracked this before, and we never had any way to track this. So all the revenue assumptions are based on the number of the vehicle counts, but not really a full understanding of the duration of their visits. However, most of the transaction fees are all incrementally based on the transaction cost. However, the shorter the transaction, the more it costs our consultant, therefore us, per transaction. So when we get into the validation, which we'll talk about in a minute, that is a key factor. Next slide. Brian and I did a town hall with our tenants on February 20th at Loose Cannon. Thank you, Aaron, if he's listening. There was 34 tenant representatives there, and we provided an update on our initial plan for validation and employee permits, answer questions, and listen to concerns. At that meeting, we proposed that all village businesses out of the gate would get sufficient parking permits for their employees, every one of them, at the start of the program. We realized that one of the factors we don't know is exactly how many employees are here and how long they're here for. And we also know that the Dolphin Lot, our agreement with Ventura Isle Wet Marina, is for 152 parking spaces. There is certainly the possibility that we could put more people in there than there are actually spaces. We also have some construction work that will be associated with the underground fuel tank, and we need to take into effect that could disrupt the pedestrian traffic flow between Dolphin Lot and the village. Therefore, out of the gate, let's make sure that everyone has access. Let's avoid any potential confusion. Then we can make a data-driven decision as to, wait a minute, there really are 300 employee vehicles parking here. We definitely need to alter the inventory. We also proposed a two-hour, $2, because it's 2 hours, validation for patrons of Ventura Harbor Village businesses. The businesses would be able to opt in if they chose, so they would be able to set the dollar value at which point they would provide validation. But that $2 would be a shared cost where we would absorb the $1.50 loss in revenue, and the tenants would reimburse the district 50 cents of that $2. really, the reason for that need is because of abuse of validation, where you can imagine a group text thread where four different employees of four different restaurants all share the code, and then suddenly they don't have to pay for parking because they're just sharing the code anyway. So you need to put something in so that the tenants have a stake in controlling over use of the validation program. Our discussion with the tenants gathered a lot of valuable feedback. Next slide. Oh. sorry, sorry, my phone's, I don't know why someone's phoning me. During the start of phase two, so I'm going to go into a bit of the details. So the parking permits first, we talked about this, but all village businesses will be provided sufficient parking permits for all of their employees. Data collected by LAS on employee parking occupancy, meaning every license plate's registered, so every time the vehicle goes around, they'll actually know how many and how long the employee vehicles are present. They'll be able to make those data-driven decisions to guide the reduction of employee permits as we deem is appropriate. And the tenants will actually really understand the impacts, that how many parking spaces their prospective customers are losing to their employees. Reduction in employee permits could take place as early as the first quarter of next year. Next slide. So as I mentioned validation, we came in with a particular idea and then we got a lot of feedback and we'll talk about a pivot. Consultation that I've done with other municipalities, agencies, vendors, the consultants such as Dixon regarding validation, the feedback is universally recommended, don't do it. Largely due to abuse. Also the level of customer support required, confusion, it didn't work, why didn't it work, or I put in the wrong code, and just a lot of issues, and it's generally not seen in a positive light. However, during the town hall meeting we had with the commissioner retreat we had in September, several trainings raised concerns about the need for it, and so we are trying to find a way to do that. When we came to our town hall that Brian and I did in February, the tenants were a little concerned about the same impacts, abuse that would cost them money, their need for their staff to help, you know, walk people out to the machine and figure out how to punch the code in. And it didn't sound all that appetizing when once it was in front of them. So next slide. Oh, one more. There we go. So we regrouped. We in talking with Dixon as well. We actually think that the most balanced method for validation will be to validate those parking at the village for less than 1 hour. Again, one of the tenants of the parking management program was to increase turnover. And nothing is going to increase turnover better than if you're gone in 59 minutes, you didn't pay a cent. So this really is incentivizing short stays in a very productive manner in our mind. Parking for longer than an hour will offer no validation, and extensions of parking sessions, again, will not be subject to validation. Meaning you put in an hour, it was free, you want to extend, it's not for 1 hour, it's not $1, it's two. The validation is only applied for those tenants or those visitors staying for less than an hour. The fiscal impact for providing this is estimated at $140,000 in reduced revenue to the district. However, again, if the program is effective and we do encourage more turnover, that number actually could be higher. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, it is what it is.
Todd, some of the other feedback and commissioners that we got was just some people just need to do short trips in. Again, it's already free Monday through Thursday. So we're only, this whole program is really just dealing with Friday through Sunday and holidays. But during those periods of time, there were some suggestions of, well, could you create certain areas within the parking lots that are the, and then that becomes a, now we're having to separately enforce certain sections of the parking lot. That doesn't really work well. So it was a combination of some of the feedback on the validation, but it was also some feedback that we got with respect to, I just need to drop my scuba tank off to get refilled. I just want to get a quick ice cream. I just want to do something quick. Maybe it's a delivery. You know, I'm dropping off some papers to my accountant on a Friday, but now it's during the paid, you know, time period. So really we felt that we're accomplishing two things at the same time. So,
yeah. Thank you, Brian. Next slide. So, next steps, with board approval of the program we have, the district will, and then if assuming the board approves the contract, we'll finalize the contract document with LAS Parking. Phase one, as I discussed, will be that the district will work first and foremost with the public awareness campaign. We want to make sure that everyone understands this. It's a lot. We've been messaging for a while, but some things such as validation and permits have been pivoting. So we need to make sure we get that message across. We need to get that out bilingually. We need to make sure that all of our stakeholders are prepared. No surprises. Last Parking will also begin procurement of physical assets, and then we will work to get phase one, which is the public launch ramp, up and running, with the goal of that being by end of April, early May. Establishment of the tenant portals will also be fundamental in that part because, you know, if you have 50, 60, 70 employees and you got to get, you know, all the license plate numbers for their entire households into the database, that's, you know, that's not fun. And I think, you know, our business owners have other things that they want to focus on. So we have to give them enough time to get that done. Once phase one is demonstrated to be fully and successfully implemented, staff will return to the board with a recommendation to implement phase two for the village and beaches, meaning that will not just not happen. That's not a light switch that we will turn on by ourselves. Ryan will bring an item back with a recommendation, and the board will make a decision as to we're ready to move forward. Next slide. I want to spend a minute on the public information campaign. Most everything in this was originally in the RFP, but there's a couple other things that were suggested and we think were really great ideas. But Laz Parking is well experienced in doing this. They're actually doing this in Burbank right now, providing a completely new overhaul and educating the public and the businesses as to the changes. So that's a great thing to be leveraging. And actually the project manager for that is going to be doing that for us here. There will be an informational webpage on the district's website developed by Laz. The design and production of multilingual information, parking signage for district parking lots. Recall that's a Coastal Commission mandatory condition of the permits. Informational flyers that will be bilingual or multilingual. Create social media content for the district to post regarding the PMP. Create newspaper advertisements that the district at our cost would post and to advertise the PMP in the newspapers. Boots on the ground ambassador support during the initial weeks of paid parking. So actually walking around to our tenants. Hey, it goes into effect tomorrow. You got all your employees in the database. Okay, let me help make sure that's taken care of. These are some flyers and brochures for your customers. Help make sure that they know what's going on. And then actually physically interacting with our customers on those first few weekends to make sure that we're actually out there. They see us and our blue jackets or whatever we decide to do, so that we're actually there showing them, pressing the buttons for it, helping them figure it out. There will also be a 1-800 number 24/7, again, bilingual for people to, if they have questions, and there'll be links and our QR codes to register complaints and citation protests, which is again, bilingual opportunity. Next slide. So I've already covered this. I don't know that we need to spend too much more other than to say that that the launch ramp and the dry storage, which we originally contemplated working together, but because of city permitting, they were sort of bifurcating. The launch ramp will go its alone, and the dry storage and new dry and the old dry storage and new dry storage will go based on when we get all the permits we need from the city and we do the construction. It's possible that this will be done before phase two, but it's the way it's shaping up, it's probably not. And next slide. These are the lots. So the launch ramp restroom, again, that's already paid parking today, or launch ramp, pardon me, lot. And then the paid parking lot up to the top left, that is the old dry storage, which will become a surface paid lot in the coming months. And then right now, the lot at the corner of Harbor and Schooner currently is completely wide open and open for public parking now, but eventually the north two-thirds of it will be fenced off and will become the new dry storage. Next slide. And then, as I mentioned, we'll be returning probably during a June meeting to seek approval for implementing phase two. The machines will be in the ground. If someone walks up, it'll say paid parking coming soon. There'll be information, QR code, that sort of thing, so that they, even if they think that they need to do something, they'll find out immediately, I don't have to do anything today. The signs will be ready to go, but they'll probably be hooded or maybe put up in the Monday through Thursday prior to going live. The tenant portals will all be created. The employee license plates will all be in the system and we'll be ready to go. The information campaign will be underway. Next slide, I think last slide. That's just a map for anyone just needs to orient, but this would be all the areas of phase two, Arbor Cove Beach Lot, the Village Lots, and Surface Null Beach. Next slide. And
Couple of wrap-up items. One of the issues that came up at the last discussion was about the license plate recognition readers at Harbor Boulevard and entrances into the village. That's been removed from this program. I don't think we had a bullet on that. There were some concerns about privacy, et cetera, with those systems, potential data breaches, and so on. So those have been removed from the program. They were contemplated as a way for the license plates to be read, and then if they did come into a paid parking area, sort of knows that that person's going to be going and getting a parking pass. So, but you know, they can come in, get to the machine, and or use the app and get on. So, so we don't think that's necessary, and based on some concerns from the commission, we dropped that. And there were some things that you asked of us to bring back. One was related to the employee permits, and I think we've got a new plan for you. It's going to be much more data driven. Again, with starting off with everybody having full use, and then most likely dialing that back, and that would be part of further discussion with the board. And then the validation system. And I think we've got a system that's much cleaner. It does require you to go register your car, which you would have had to have done anyway. So that'll have to be part of the education. It's not, well, the first hour is free. As long as I leave here, I'm not going to get a ticket. No, you do need to enter your license plate into the system in order to be recognized for that 59 minutes. What we don't get into in cost here, and some things that we'll want the board to consider in the future, are going to be other transportation programs. So, you know, the goal here is that there will be some net revenue to apply to things like transportation, shuttles, security, some of those things that we talked about. So when the Dolphin Lot is, you know, fully up and running, and maybe has higher demand now because it is free and the other areas are paid, which was the whole idea. And those evening, you know, staffers who, you know, may not feel particularly comfortable, you know, at night, one of the things we'll probably bring back is a discussion about increased private security that we already contract now, and maybe increase that to include some of those areas for those satellite parking areas, such as the Dolphin Lot. But also, you know, shuttles, you know, Todd has done two rounds of Parade of Light shuttles. We weren't able to do it 2 years ago because of Ventura Water Pure, but, you know, three Parade of Lights ago, and last year we were able to do it, and with our signage out on Harbor Boulevard, I think we reported back to you, we got a very strong response to that. I think it was 400 and something riders, so that was great to see. That was a district-funded activity. Obviously, some of these net revenues can go to help to fund additional security, maybe some additional shuttle services from satellite lots to the village and so on. So when you see these net numbers, this is before you consider additional management activities that would bolster the program as a whole. Kind of hard for us to give you something specific at this point without, you know, actual revenues beginning to come in. And I think the other thing, as much as we talk about the tenant education ambassador jackets and all that, we do intend to have a second town hall with our tenants, potentially between phase one and phase two. Certainly this is public information, but that really got a good response by being out at the village, you know, in the morning, and you saw the numbers. We had a good turnout. So we would use that opportunity to do the education on the parking portal, and give them updates on these other activities that we modified based on the feedback that we got from them. So those, I think, are some other notes. I know Todd mentioned, but I did want to mention Ben Verdugo again, who played an important role with Dixon as our independent consultant, helping us develop the program and analyze the proposals we got in. So we're certainly grateful for their assistance. They're going to continue to work with us, and of course Todd's effort here too. So with that, we'll turn it back to the board for questions.
Thank you for the presentation, board members. Jackie, you have questions?
I do. First, I want to just thank you for responding to the concerns about the rollout, the timing, preparing the public and the tenants for everything that's coming down. It sounds like you guys have taken steps to do that, slowed down the rollout so that we'll have more time to make that happen. So I appreciate that. A couple questions that jump out. One is about 300 parking spots for employees is at peak hours. Does that account for when we're fully occupied, so when the new restaurants open?
It will really depend a lot on the use. We don't okay. actually know what's going to be in there. I mean, it's very interesting when you think about the volume of employees that work for, say, a restaurant like Andrea's, which has a, you know, very quick serve and almost assembly line business model. And then you look at like Loose Cannon, which is probably maybe 80% bigger and probably one third the staff. So really the business concept can have a massive impact, which is why we couldn't just pick a number, this many per square foot or this many per business, because it really is so variable based on the type of business operation.
So when you're talking to prospective restaurants and others, how does the parking plan figure into the conversation with prospective tenants?
We're just upfront with it. And a lot of them actually are like, good. Okay. Because that means that they know that the priority is going to be on their customers. I've had a lot of conversations where people are like, you don't have paid parking, I'm not interested in coming. I think Jessica Snipes has heard that a few times as well.
Okay. The charge based on the credit card transaction or the convenience fee, can you explain? So it's 35 cents?
Okay. So, and by the way, if we need questions, I do know that there are representatives of LAS online. So if I get in over my head and you ask harder questions than I can answer, then they're there. So the credit card fee is one thing, and then we'll call it the convenience fee is another. The convenience fee is an established rate, and that is being charged by LAS for the convenience of using their mobile payments solution. And that, as proposed here, that fee is passed on to the users, meaning our customers. The transaction fees are being absorbed by us. And that is a multi-level thing. Whereas, for example, if you use a debit card, a prepaid debit card, a credit card that gives you points or cash back, all these different things have minutely and somewhat not minutely different values in terms of what the percentage rate is. There's also a fee that goes back to them as their, you know, a bit of their money. I can't remember what they call that, but there is an amount of money that goes back to them for the transaction. And then I think there's one other layer that I'm probably forgetting, but in sum, those numbers all vary. And there's also some of it is a fixed cost and some of it is a percentage cost. So on a dollar transaction, it might be a 20 cent fee. And on a $4 transaction, part of that still might be a 20 cent fee, but another part is a percentage. So it is highly malleable, and it was made it actually one of the most difficult parts in actually selecting the vendors on a price basis was to really drill down and get a very comprehensive explanation as to how those fees broke down.
Yeah, because I'm just wondering, we're describing a dollar an hour, but when I look at my credit card, it says what?
If you pay at the machine, it says a dollar.
Paying cash at the machine?
No, you pay with a credit card. We're absorbing.
Okay, but if I do it by text,
you'll pay $1.35.
Okay. And that's going to be clearly communicated to people.
Yeah. And that's, City of Ventura does that. Yeah. Not everyone gets, I will say, 35 cents is cheaper than some places are getting. I was prepared to see 45 cents. And so 35, I felt like was part of the competitive nature of our.
Say that out loud when the vendor's on the phone. What about with my app? Am I going to be charged $1.35?
It's the same 35 cents. The app, okay. And technically the app and the pay by, you can use a QR code, you can use an app, you can use a text, you can use whatever, and they all arrive at essentially the same transaction portal.
So that's clearly communicated to the consumer that if you're going to use this app, convenient
it'll be on the
for
signs.
You, but it will be 35 cents more.
Yeah. Okay. It'll be on the signs and it'll be on the app itself.
Okay.
Or the transaction landing page, we'll call it.
Okay. And then the 1 hour of free parking, not a free hour parking. I still have to go. I still have to pay my dollar or put in. So if I go to the machine and I put
you need to register your license plate
But what if I leave after 59 minutes,
You
but
could.
thought I was going to be there for 2 hours?
Well, then you might have paid $2
Okay,
if you thought you were going to be there for two
so
hours.
I have to know that it's going to be less than an hour for me to take advantage
Of the
of.
of the validation.
So if I go up to the machine and think I'm only going to be here for 45 minutes and it takes longer for my transaction to occur, I'm going to be
extending your stay.
Extending my stay, but I haven't paid anything. So am I going to be in violation?
If you don't, yes. If you don't extend the stay, you would be. So I'll give you an example, and we need to work obviously with Laz on the right solution and messaging. But if you walk up to a machine and picture it look like an iPad, they'll be like, how long are you staying? Up to 1 hour. It won't tell you yet. It doesn't have to tell you how much it's going to cost. Up to 1 hour. Beep. No cost. You must enter your license plate number, and you must return to pay if you're extending your stay. Same thing in the landing page. It can be done that way. And then 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. So you are picking the time, and then it's telling you. So I would think we would not actually put on the signs, physical signs themselves, 1 hour free, because that would create the confusion. You need to go to the machine. And only by going to the machine are you going to have the opportunity to get that validated part.
So not doing it through text or QR code.
Same thing.
Okay.
You text in, how long are you staying? 1 hour. Hey, great. The Port District is validating your stay, provided you don't stay more than 1 hour.
All right.
I think somewhere in our education campaign, that's almost, again, a marketing tool, right? So we actually do want it, not only for education purposes, but for marketing of, you know, come here, do your quick trip and go, and, you know, you didn't pay anything anyway. So I think somehow, whether it's the machine or somewhere we're going to want to market that, right? Because that was the point of some of the feedback we got back, right? Was we don't want to scare people off that might just need to do something relatively quick, and then they choose a vendor in some other shopping center where they don't have to pay for parking, right?
And then, speaking of marketing, marketing does really great events. You've got a movie night that could last 2 to 3 hours, if not longer, for some families. Have we thought about how to promote or create free parking or making parking passes available as a winning thing?
I think generally, I mean, those events will, you know, you'll get charged if that's on a Saturday, then, you know, and you're going to stay for 3 hours, then you're going to pay $3 for parking. We've had that question come up with people who are vendors who do special events at the harbor. And our intent at this point would be that, all of those cars are subject to the parking. The same would be same for Parade of Lights or any other major event we do. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking more of promoting it through, you get a parking pass. We'll do a drawing. You get a parking pass for the evening kind of thing.
Okay. A giveaway.
A giveaway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure Jennifer's already come up with a name for what you just described. So there's already, you know, the seaside parking pass or something.
Yeah.
So she'll come up with it. So no, great idea.
Okay. All right. That's all I have right now, but something might get triggered when other people ask questions.
I appreciate that. Chris?
Yeah. Thank you. I like the phasing. I'm glad we talked about that previously. I think that's going to be serviced very well. And I really like the idea of the boots on the ground and having ambassadors out there on those first weekends, walking around and helping people. Because if you lived here through the Ventura, when they rolled theirs out, that was a huge problem. There was a queue at the kiosk, right, as everyone's trying to figure out how to do it. So having somebody there and then helping them show them how, what I hope will be easy it is to do, I think is a great idea. So,
And I think that'll probably be a combination of everyone you're seeing here plus the Laz team, right?
You're not going to ask the commissioners to do that.
No.
Come on in.
No.
Blackjack for you, Chris.
No, we won't make you do that.
So the identification of the license plates themselves, is that going to be done with a roving vehicle? Is that the, okay.
Yes, that'll be a roving vehicle who's got the cameras on it, and it's
and they'll
seeing
be
those
going up and
license
down
plate.
the lot
Yep.
all day long.
Yep.
Right. Okay. So
again, no gates at entries, none of that, right? Cars are just coming through the lots.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so and so their system records, it'll actually record, I suppose, even the location where they are, but it's going to record the time that they recorded that vehicle. It'll be date and time stamped, if you will. And then that's going to get compared to your database off the kiosk and say
you've either entered
you entered it or you didn't or
right.
what have you. Okay. Okay, I think that's good. And I completely agree about the validation. That is that's a really difficult thing. I think your idea is a good one to replace it. And I think it'd be interesting to see how it works out. I'm not familiar with this kind of an operation, but I like it. I think it's got a lot of potential. I'm a little confused, if you will, about the structure. So if you're under 4 hours, is $1 an hour. So if I'm staying 4 hours, it's $4. If I'm staying 5 hours, it's $10. Am I understanding that correctly? Okay.
Yes.
I want to make sure that. So someone who can someone do 4 hours, and if they really want to get to this point, and they're staying five, they come out, they move their car, and then key back in for an hour. Does our system, what happened to our license plate guy? Would we get the date stamp and the location and say, oh yeah, it's moved, it's not there anymore? I mean, and we're not going to violate them?
No. So the whole point of the LPR is that it doesn't matter where you are in mm-hmm. the entire harbor.
Okay.
There is one database, and your license plate number is in it for having paid, or it's not for not having paid.
Okay.
So if you go to Harbor Cove Beach and you press in $4 and you're having a great time at the beach, and at hour two you go get an ice cream cone, you're fine. And then if at hour three you're like, you know what, I think I'm going to stay all day, and you extend it and pay $10, you're good all day, and you can move anywhere you want.
Right. What I'm saying is the person who's trying to beat the system.
Yeah. When you return, it's the same license plate number. So it's going to say, well, you're going to have to pay.
Right. But I think where commissioner's going is what happens when you add that fifth hour? Am I at $5 or am I at $10?
I'm thinking of the traditional on-street parking way that you beat on-street parking that is limited. You move your car because it's chalked. You move the car.
So this one's not
limited,
right?
You put it in your new quarter, right?
Yeah. So in this case, it's not limited. You just pay more for being there more than 4 hours. And I'm assuming the LAS team will, put the software together so that if you're trying to just get around the $10,
right?
And
you
pay
only want to
only
pay $5 instead of $10 because
right.
you're staying
Probably
hours.
By the time you add that fifth That's, dollar, that, I'm assuming yeah. that okay. will now trigger the need for $5 more or $6 more, I guess.
Yeah. Hopefully, this isn't a big problem. It's just one of those things. You know, I'm kind of like, wow, this gets kind of complicated.
Yeah, but it is designed that it's not tied to a space. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. you'll see the space is marked on the ground, and this is space 100. You're not going and plugging in a parking
space. Oh, yeah, yeah. No,
so
no.
you're in fact, the system encourages you more to maybe move around. Maybe I did to Todd's point. Maybe I did start off at Harbor Cove Beach, and then I went to Natasha's Harbor Cove Cafe at Marina West Absolutely. Too. But now I want to go to the Village. I heard there's a movie right. night, so now I'm going to head over there. As long as you've kept paying as you go, you're good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Have concern that I might have is as people are trying to now. You mentioned it about the Dolphin lot, as they're now trying to avoid paying, and they're going to now utilize those free lots.
We want them to.
Right.
Right.
What about Portside and our hotels? Those some of their lots, are they permit only in Portside along the streets there? Or...
So Portside is private streets, and they have a structure that is frankly a little bit hard to find. So most people end up, looking at some of our satellite parking, thinking that's where the spaces are. I think that we're going to continue to work closely, since Natasha's still here, with Marina West too. They're going to see some potential impact, and we're going to have to work mm-hmm. closely with them because they're right across the street from Harbor Cove Beach, right? And you've got an area there of parking that it might be like, well, I'm going to go over there and avoid the, you know, and avoid the paying the paying parking. Also remember we have agreements with National Park Service to provide parking for their guests, so we have to validate, do some validation programming for them as well. We met with the manager of Safe Harbor to talk about their parking lot because that's where the Dolphin Lot is. They've worked with Laz in San Diego, or do work with Laz in San Diego. In fact, they gave them recommendation as well to us. And they might be looking to make some of their own improvements within the lot, which needs some work.
Yeah.
But they might create some control systems for their own tenants. And guests that come into there that would sort of create a more physical separation between the Dolphin Lot and the rest there. So I think, you know, during this period of time, especially as we go from phase one to phase two, there's going to be a lot of outreach, not just with the village tenants, but with our master tenants who are most likely to be affected from this.
Okay. One last thing. Does the contract include performance requirements for them, as in when a kiosk breaks, they have to replace it within X hours or days, or, you know, those kind of things to make sure that we don't want to get an argument. Oh, you took too long to do this, or you didn't do that, or no, that's your problem, not mine. You know, do you feel comfortable that we have one in there?
Yeah, I don't know that we've put it in quite in that context. So you've given me some ideas, and I'm sure they're listening, and we'll talk about that. The intent was to buy a complete spare. It literally is four bolts to put in the ground and ready to go, and then all of the spare components. And Ben and I were at the convention in Costa Mesa in October, and other than the credit card reader, I could have done it after watching them do it. It's really, really plug and play. So our facilities team is sharp, and if need be, you know, in one case, maybe someone runs it over and it's smashed or whatever, and okay, well, we'll have another one on site. It's not for us to point fingers at them to say that, hey, well, if that was vandalism, what could they have done? Okay. We spent an extra, I call it $6,500, and we have another machine bolted in the ground in, you know, 30 minutes.
Yeah. Or a software glitch.
Well, that's where the liquidated damages clauses exist. Okay. So that's a little different, and that we do have pretty strong protections in there if that surfaces.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I've got a question. Back in the old days, we used to have these things called parking meters. And there's this good show, if you ever watch late at night, it's called Parking Wars. These parking enforcement officers put tickets on things. And then some people, even though they know that they parked illegally, they went over or anything like that, they use the appeal process. You have the right to go and appeal your parking ticket. What if somebody contends that your computer system was wrong, I didn't do that? Is there any type of contested process? And will it be disclosed so people know, so that we're not getting calls that, oh no, you know, we'll just complain to the port that.
Yeah, you know. No, excellent question. So I'm going to answer a little bit, and then I actually will get Ben to maybe answer this, or maybe he'll defer to Laz. So our program actually has a lot of protections that are, or mitigation, we'll call it. And the first one is that the very first ticket you're going to get is a warning. And on that warning is going to tell you what you did wrong and what you need to do next. And that should, you know, most people should realize pretty quickly, oh, I'm not going to get away with this another time. Hopefully not. The next one is that if you do get a ticket, and on that ticket, it will say, you got a ticket. Go to the machine right now, pay $15, and the ticket's gone. And I think for a lot of people, it's like, well, I was trying to game the system, and I thought I could get away with it. And okay, for now, for the price of paying for a day of parking plus a coffee, I don't have a ticket. My day isn't completely ruined. It has to be more than 10, or else everyone would just wait to get the ticket. But it doesn't need to be $60 or hundreds of dollars or anything like that to incentivize people to want to do that. After that, then it does actually become, for example, we can direct Laz's staff to say, look, if someone runs up to you and says, look, you know, I desperately needed to use the bathroom and I didn't have time to go to get the machine, or I struggle to figure it out, we have total authority to tell them, if someone walks up to you, just walk them over to the machine, show them how to pay, and delete the ticket. Because we don't need enforcement revenue for this program to work. We need compliance. So if the enforcement officers are trained, just walk that person to the machine and show them how to get it done, problem solved, make the ticket go away. So I think those are the first steps we take. And then after that, we build in the opportunity for them to, through a QR code that's on the ticket or a website, or text this number to, you know, whatever, to protest your ticket. And then I don't have a lot of experience what happens after that, but Ben, maybe you could sort of, Ben made all the trip here, you might as well say something.
Yeah, and I would just say too that the LPR technology is pretty true in terms of capturing any sort of citation issues and people really not behaving the way they should do when they park. Now I would defer to Laz in terms of the adjudication process, because as Todd says, they can handle it right here when it happens. But if they want to continue to go through that process, I would defer to Laz on that.
Do you want us to get a comment?
Mohammed, you can unmute yourself and speak.
Yeah, good evening, Todd. For the adjudication process, it's a pretty simple a web-based informational page that people will go to, and it'll be a step-by-step process of how to submit a request for a review. And the review is done from first level to a third step, which determines if the citation was valid or not. And a formal communication goes back to the requester. I don't know if Todd, if there was any additional information that was being requested. Sorry, I was having some sound issues.
I don't know if you guys had more questions or not, but.
So typically we call this adjudication.
Yeah.
And so who is it? Go ahead.
We really just want to know, what are the steps in the appeal process?
Yeah. So, I mean, in essence, if the customer doesn't make the decision to do something in real time, pay the citation or whatever, then they would, on the ticket, there will be instructions as to how to appeal it, which would take them to a website. They would fill out the appeal. Then Laz would have two or maybe three different steps. The third step probably coming to us to make the final decision as to whether or not that appeal is warranted. And like, look, I hired a new employee. I forgot to give him a code. Can you cut him a break? Laz maybe wouldn't, or maybe we give them the guidance to, yes, those are acceptable, or maybe those need to come to us. So we have to set the ground rules as to where the different levels are and their authority to void a ticket.
So sadly, having been in enforcement business for a number of years, and they still won't pay. What's your next step?
So the tickets are tied to the DMV. So we set, and Mohammed, I think, can explain this, or maybe Ben as well. We believe we set a dollar threshold and a time threshold at which you can't pull your registration on your vehicle without remedying your ticket. That is not something that we have in place today, and that does cost money out of the citation fee, but that will be implemented in this part of the system.
Great. I've got a few myself. Some of them have been answered, but first I'd like to say thank you. You've simplified it a lot. I think it's going to be a lot easier to educate people. It's going to be a lot easier to implement it and to manage the whole thing. So I really appreciate that. I think it avoids many issues that we might otherwise have had. I'll jump down. I want to, on part of the gaming the system, people should know, and I don't know how we educate them, that if they stay less than an hour and then they leave and they come back the same day, it's still going to count as 2 hours or more, right?
It will.
So, which, I mean, that's fine. We just need to make sure people understand that. In terms of your movie night and a lot of things, well, this only goes up to 8 p.m., right? So if somebody comes in at 7 for an 8 p.m., or whatever. Exactly.
Not even.
Yeah, so it's not, so even if they're here until, yeah.
701 and later, you're good to go.
Yeah, so even if they're
they might
here
not find a spot on the lawn based on our level of participation, so it's a risk.
But they don't need to be worried that they're going to be here until 10 or 11 o'clock at night and still paying, so that's great. On the 2179 cover, it says it covers everything. What about our direct costs? We're talking about spending money on advertising, potentially on staffing, on running electric power out to the kiosks and so on. Is that included in here or? Okay.
No. No, all of the upfront costs, you know, so for example, buying the machines and all that stuff, that is buried in the contract because that's Laz's expense, so it'll bill us.
That's what I thought.
And one of the things we've been doing and the team is working on is, you know, the very first parking machine will probably get bolted down to the back of one of our trucks, and we're going to drive it around and test every single location, which SIM card works best. And, oh, we need Verizon for this location, or you need T-Mobile over here. Okay, we got good signal. This is working. Solar tests, like, okay, let's, you know, simulate, you know, foggy May. Is there enough electricity? I'm assured that there is, but, you know, really rigorous testing of all those things. We need to run electrical, then it's not contemplated in the budget, and it's not going to be on Laz to do it. It will be our additional expense.
So if we run the numbers when we look at net, that includes some rough estimate of what it's going to cost the district directly as opposed to through Laz?
Yeah, again, in this phase one, we will find out what we need to know in terms of those costs. And no one has the answers for me today.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a lot of it'll be in kind, right? It's going to be our time. A lot of it. If we're doing third-party advertising, if I'm having Jennifer put stuff out, you know, then there will be an actual cost. I think there's what you're going to see is a lot of staff time involved in this as well, for sure.
Which could lead to then a need for more staff.
Sure.
So
sure.
And then there's trenching to get the electric out and so on.
I mean, one of the things I want to get marketing involved in is that one of the things that the contract contemplates or the agreement with Laz is doing wrapping the machines with advertising. So one of the things that I want to do is the machines, particularly the ones at the beaches, will advertise the village. We'll probably have a QR code on them. Go there, it'll bring up the, you know, the events at the village, the businesses, things like that. So so they've contemplated some cost where we start to customize it there. That might be potentially some of our cost as well. But I think it's a great way to use those machines also as a way to advertise.
For sure.
Yeah.
In terms of Ventura West, your location with Ventura West 1, you're probably pretty safe from people. And 2, don't you have a gate for your boaters that... So then you might be impacted by that. Yeah. So I know at Ventura Isle, Garrett's planning a gating system with key cards and so on. And I would imagine, you know, Portside, and you might need to do the same. I don't know.
Yeah, I think some of the master tents are also considering their own paid parking plans.
After, you know, after completion of the 3-year and potentially extensions on that, if we do we plan to rebid it, would we be able to rebid it with does anybody else support this equipment, or would we be looking to continue with the same contractor?
I mean, after 5 years?
That's why I said 3 plus.
Okay, I just wasn't sure.
The extension, the, you know,
yeah, post options. Extensions, I think that's, I mean, that'll be based on 5 years of history and, you know, board's decision at that time, probably competitive process. Also, the Coastal Commission permits are 5 years. So we, you know, that we'd be recalibrating and probably resubmitting permit applications in year 4 with Coastal Commission based on all the data we've been able to gather over the 48 months.
Okay.
Yeah. The service life of the machines is about 8 years. So...
And last one, going back to people complying, are we going to be tracking real offenders and seeing if there's any people that we consistently have problems with?
I will ask Ben or John to answer that one.
That's the beauty about license plate recognition systems, right? It's already tracked. And so for your first offense, the idea would be just to get a warning. Second offense, that's when it really starts happening, right? So as opposed to a pay by space system, the pay by place system is really effective for that. So it's really easy to manage on the back end side, and you can really determine who the real offenders are.
Excellent. Yeah, because I thought we weren't keeping license plates, which you'd obviously have to do in order to track offenders.
Yeah, it tracks the license plate. It doesn't track the actual person. So it's going to have that alphanumeric already memorized, and it's just going to capture that over and over again.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but that's within the patrol areas of the parking plan, as opposed to, I think the concern I heard last time was Harbor Boulevard and a lot of people who are not necessarily even going into the paid parking areas, license plates are getting picked up by that. And so those are gone. Yeah.
And I think just to clarify, what we're actually talking about tracking is citations. If you have a citation against you, then you're in that system. The other ones that will be actively tracked, obviously, are the employee permits, because there's no other way to do it.
Correct.
The other ones are in sort of semi-compartmentalized databases, where these companies have fiscal responsibility. And there has been lawsuits where there has been data breaches, and those companies have had to, have had to make it right, for lack of a better word.
Good. And lastly, I appreciate the different levels of resolution. I brought up an example of a friend who's got a ticket in one of these systems because he entered his wife's traffic or license plate and transposed two digits. So I'm sure that you would have some way to, my guess is that's a level one resolution if somebody can look at it and go, well, yeah, gee. So I appreciate that you have different levels of resolution. Is there any other comment from the board? Do we have any public comment online or? Nope. In that case, public comment is closed. And we are looking for a motion on this.
I move that the commissioners approve a professional services agreement with Laz Parking, California LLC in the amount of not to exceed $2,179,400 to provide parking management services with a 3-year term with 2 1-year options.
Second.
Oh, all in favor?
Aye.
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 It sounds like it's passed. Thank you very much. Item number 3, update on the state of emergency to address the failure of the elevator at 1591 Spinnaker Drive.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I'd like to ask Justin to come up and give a report on the current status.
Evening, commissioners. Good to see everybody. Every 2 weeks for a little while. I just have a quick update for you guys. So staff continues to be in weekly contact with TK Elevators Project Manager Kim Boyle. We're still on track to hit our target date of having crews on site April 21st, 2025. So in keeping with this time frame, staff has a pre-construction meeting with TK Site Superintendent this coming Friday, March 21st at 11 a.m. No additional progress payments have been issued nor requested since the original material deposit was issued and accepted for $78,126.89.
Thank you, Justin. Madam Vice Chair, I did want to point out I have a second recommendation that's identified in the report tonight. And that second recommendation is with respect to three office tenants who are directly impacted by the loss of the elevator. We did note in the last meeting, I think in the fiscal impact statement, at that time we had received a request. And the follow-up to that is that I'm recommending to the board that for even though the request came in from one tenant, there are three who are impacted. And I think from an equity perspective and also from an impact perspective, our recommendation is to reduce prorate their rent by 20% for the number of days that they're impacted by this. So we won't know that till the end. We would give them a credit on the back end of their statement. But I just wanted to note that that's an additional recommendation tonight that's in your report.
Any questions from the board? Any public comment? Public comment is closed. Do we have a motion?
I'd move the recommended actions, and that's a great idea. Thank you for doing that.
Second.
Sounds like we're motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Roll call. Oh, it says voice vote. Sorry.
Commissioner Gardena?
Yes.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Rainey?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gerd?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hall. Vote carries 4-0.
I believe that's all the business before the board tonight. So we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's supposed to be, yeah.
Process for appealing goes to.
But actually, have you signed some resolution since Mike's going to be gone?
Okay, do
things.
Good ones, and then there's one for paid impartial, either retired judge or retired police officer.
Okay, that.
So there's three layers to the appeal process. So in the final one, it says impartial. We pay them, but.